Well, good evening, little children. It's 18:12 hours Eastern Daylight Time. The date is July 16th, 2023. Ward Green with you again. Carl Jung said or wrote, depression is like a woman in black. If she turns up, don't shoo her away. Invite her in, offer her a seat, treat her like a guest, and listen to what she wants to say. That from the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung. The Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu said, quote, fill your bowl to the brim and it will spill. Keep sharpening your knife and it will become blunt. Actually, he said it will be blunt, to quote perhaps more accurately. Mark Twain said, whatever a man's age, he can reduce it by several years by putting a bright colored flower in his buttonhole. And our song for today was an important song, is an important song, but it was important because it, more than any other song, according to Wikipedia, made rock and roll mainstream. At the time of its re-release in 1955, after 1 year of already having been released, without getting into the details, I don't know why it was re-released. Perhaps they made a better recording. But in Australia, it was number one in 1955 and 56, released in May of 1955, by Bill Haley and the Comets. It was number one in the UK as a single, and also number one on two of the three US Billboard charts, the Hot 100 and the Cash Box. So it was number one in four different charts around the world. At that time, there weren't as many charts, but in 1955, this song was released for the second time by Bill Haley and the Comets, an important song to the history of mainstream rock and roll, and it's called Rock Around the Clock.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put the flat back so. Join me home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes. 1 o'clock, around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock.
Bill Haley died at the age of, I'll just double check, 55? Yeah, 55 years old. So another person in music who died young. Now, the idea of rocking around the clock is perhaps not a very realistic one to do every day. Dancing all day every day is hardly realistic. But the song really does create a certain mood of energy. And that's possibly why it was so successful. It brought a lot of joy into my life, I remember. Every time that song played, I wanted to dance, and that happened for many years. That song always has meant that to me for some reason. I mean, why it's better than other ones? It's the blues, for one thing. It's the blues progression, written as a blues chord structure, 12-bar blues. Our article for today, Born and Raised, is chapter 2 now, the part that we're studying, and paragraph 3. The reasons it has taken until now to get to the point of writing about this are manifold, but include: 1, it is a very religiously important matter to many people. 2, it is a complex problem. And 3, I lacked knowledge. So those were all reasons why I might have hesitated to write about this. That is the life and times of Jesus, the chronology of the life of Jesus. Even with a firm understanding of the many facets that govern the calendars involved, it almost defies logic. Oh, I did research yesterday. Yes, and I found with great detail. I used the program Planetary, Stellar, and Lunar Visibility, version 3.1.0, which calculates the first visibility of the moon, and I was able to show that, in fact, it was first visible on March 23rd in Jerusalem using that program in the year 30 CE, in the evening of March 23rd, which was, in fact, a Wednesday, is that correct? The 23rd? I believe it was, yeah. But, I mean, I need to refer to my notes here if I want to be entirely diligent here, entirely accurate. To the best of my ability, I need to refer to my notes. So I'm going to do that. Maybe I could show you my notes here, possibly. But I wrote these notes here. So let's see if you can see them. Oh, yeah. So March, I can't read it because it's reverse image, but you can read it, maybe. Or maybe it will be reverse image for you, too. I guess it will. March 23rd, 30 CE. Right. I looked at all the different Arcus Physionis. 9, 10.0, 10.5, 10.6. It was valid for all of those values. When you got up higher, it became March 24th. Beyond 10.6, but 10.66 even. 10.66 was valid, but beyond that, 10.67, using the PLSV 3.1.0 program, would have been March 24th. But it was March 23rd, and Thursday, March 23rd. Is that right? Let me look at it, so I can read it. Thursday, March 23rd was a Thursday for everyone except for the Essenes, because they made it, because that was also using our own program, the LEAP version 15.3.7.1 on the Will of Jehovah website. That program, when you click on the lunar image, you get the equinox for that year. Once you have it set for the year 30 CE, just click on the lunar image and you get the equinox and vernal equinox for that year was 7:21 in the morning, 0721 hours of the morning of March 23rd. That was equinox. So the evening of that day would have been after the equinox. by our own calculations. And that is based on much research that I did to produce that calculator. And it agrees with many other people, more or less, you know, to some extent or other, it agrees in its results with other people's calculations too. But it looks like March 23rd is in fact the right time for the evening of that day, which the Essenes would have called the Wednesday, because they would rename the Thursday to a Wednesday. So everything looks perfect. 8 more days will be the end of March, and then 5 days to April 5th, which was 13 days later, which they would have called a Tuesday, but which would be a Wednesday in our own calendar. That would have been Nisan 14, right? Let me think now. 14 days later, right? But because we're not entirely sure when they began, whether they began the previous night or whatever, but they would have had, you see, the night, if they wanted the occurrence of the equinox to occur on Nisan 1, then they would have to do it the previous night. So the day on which the equinox occurred began on Tuesday night for them, and on Wednesday night for us. But the Passover would have begun one day earlier, because 13 days later it was on the 14th compared to the 1st, would have been on the Tuesday night for us. And on the Monday night for the Essenes, the beginning of the day, which had its main occurrence for the Essenes on the Tuesday, and for us on the Wednesday, which was the 14th daytime of Nisan 14, on which Jesus was impaled. So it all works amazingly well in the chronology without any effort on our part. But the one questionable thing is, we don't really know. It's hard to believe or imagine that the Essenes renamed their day of the week to match a Wednesday on Nisan 1st every year, so that Wednesday was always Nisan 1st for them. That's hard to believe, even though we have research that shows that is the case. It's not the most, you know, convincingly perfect evidence or anything like that. So we don't have enough knowledge of the Essenes to be absolutely certain, but it looks very, very fascinating and very convincing in the circumstances all considered. So even with a firm understanding, I wrote, you know, it defies logic almost. Also, even when we admit that the resolution is found, the secondary lines of logic may continue for a while. It is not my desire to introduce controversy into this very important subject. Thus, I hesitated to begin. For if we are not careful, we could undermine the faithful or even our own faith, diverting attention from Jesus. On the other hand, not writing something that confirms the validity of faith in our Lord is apparently worse. Only by establishing this year of 30 CE as the date of the crucifixion in our own minds. I'm hesitating here because I have a conflicted view about my health. I don't want to appear to be too healthy, because I might need a root canal, and I'm taking a lot of antibiotics as well as vitamins and things like that. But I might be strong enough to do the study, but it doesn't mean that I'm feeling good, okay? I want to make that clear so that I can read effectively and efficiently and well without people thinking that therefore I don't need treatment such as perhaps a root canal or something. I might still need that, even though I seem like I'm strong. I'm not strong. Only by establishing this year of 30 CE as the date of the resurrection. It's not the resurrection. Let's start again. Only by establishing this year of 30 CE as the date of the crucifixion in our own minds, and only then do we see how preceding events like the birth of Jesus, for example, or Daniel 9:27, talking about the 70 weeks, can be made to stand or fall. We should be aware that nowhere in Scripture has there been an indication. Let the reader use discernment of the middle of Daniel's week and its meaning. As is usual with prophecy, multiple fulfillment is the way in which it is best understood or best fulfilled. The question is, to what extent does the middle of the week of Daniel 9:27 bear on the year 30 CE, if at all? And how also does the year 30 CE affect the year of birth? Before we consider this, the writings of Paul, as we conclude this chapter, who was, quote, an apostle to the nations, unquote, after he was converted, as also Luke's book of Acts and the civic history of the times, afford us more insight into any specific years. So we see this is coming to be a very potentially revolutionary and fascinating article and study about the life of Jesus and the dating, and the proof regarding the dating of the impalement and the birth of Jesus. All of these things. It's becoming very significant. I want to say also that when somebody is accused to be wicked, we should note that people who are less intelligent tend to regard more intelligent people as wicked. That's something to note, because they can't understand it. If they can't understand it, it's beyond their understanding, then they tend to misunderstand it. And if they misunderstand it, then they very frequently have to, you know, decide, what does it mean? And they decide that this person is a wicked person because they don't agree with us. So these organizations who use a simplified understanding of things to try to enable the understanding to be available for everybody who is less intelligent, they sacrifice accuracy, and they declare anyone intelligent who is more intelligent than they are to be wicked. That's something to keep in mind. Now, our proverb for today is Ecclesiastes 1:12, which we've seen before. It's referring to the first part of Ecclesiastes 2, chapter 1, which says, "The congregator, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem," Ecclesiastes 1:1. And also Ecclesiastes 1:12, today's proverb, "I, the congregator, happen to be king over Israel in Jerusalem," referring to Solomon, because in verse 1 he refers to himself as the son of David. He was king in Jerusalem. He must be Solomon, therefore, logically. Logic dictates. The writer of Ecclesiastes was, in fact, King Solomon. According to the evidence in the book of Ecclesiastes itself. Now, number 16, little children, a very important but lengthy chapter. "And Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, proceeded to get up together with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. And On, the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben. And they proceeded to rise up before Moses, they and 250 men of the sons of Israel, chieftains of the assembly, summoned ones of the meeting, men of fame. So they congregated themselves against Moses and Aaron and said to them, 'That is enough of you, because the whole assembly are all of them holy and Jehovah is in their midst. Why then should you lift yourselves up above the congregation of Jehovah?' When Moses got to hear it, he at once fell upon his face. Then he spoke to Korah and to his entire assembly, saying, 'In the morning, Jehovah will make known who belongs to him and who is holy and who must come near to him, and whoever he may choose.'" It should say whomever he may choose. That's a grammatical error. "Whomever he may choose will come near to him. Do this. Take fire holders for yourselves, Korah and his entire assembly, and put fire in them and place incense upon them before Jehovah tomorrow. And it must occur that the man whom Jehovah will choose, he is the Holy One. That is enough of you, you sons of Levi." And Moses went on to say to Korah, "Listen, please, you sons of Levi. Is it such a little thing for you men that the God of Israel has separated you men from the assembly of Israel to present you to himself to carry on the service of Jehovah's tabernacle and to stand before the assembly to minister to them, and that he should bring you and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you near? So must you men also try to secure the priesthood? For that reason, you and all your assembly who are gathering together are against Jehovah. As for Aaron, what is he that you men should murmur against him?" Later, Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. But they said, "We are not going to come up. is it so little a thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to put us to death in the wilderness, that you should also try to play the prince over us to the limit? As it is, you have not brought us into any land flowing with milk and honey that you may give us an inheritance of field and vineyard. Is it the eyes of those men that you want to bore out? We are not going to come out. At this, Moses became very angry and said to Jehovah, do not turn to look at their grain offering. Not one male ass have I taken away from them, nor have I harmed one of them. Then Moses said to Korah, you and all your assembly, be present before Jehovah, you and they and Aaron, tomorrow. And take each one his fire holder, and you men must put incense upon them and present each one his fire holder before Jehovah, 250 fire holders, and you and Aaron each his fire holder. So they took each one his fire holder and put fire upon them and placed incense upon them and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting together with Moses and Aaron. When Korah got all the assembly together against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, then Jehovah's glory appeared to all the assembly. Jehovah now spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from the midst of this assembly, that I may exterminate them in an instant. At this they fell upon their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of every sort of flesh, will just one man sin and you become indignant against the entire assembly? In turn, Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the assembly, saying, get away from around the tabernacles of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. After that, Moses got up and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the older men of Israel went with him. Then he spoke to the assembly, saying, turn aside, please, from before the tents of these wicked men, and do not touch anything that belongs to them, that you may not be swept away in all their sin. Immediately they got away from before the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, from every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out, taking their stand at the entrance of their tents, together with their wives and their sons and their little ones. Then Moses said, by this you will know that Jehovah has sent me to do all these deeds, that it is not of my own heart. If it is according to the death of all mankind that these people will die, and with the punishment of all mankind that punishment will be brought upon them, then it is not Jehovah that sent me, that has sent me. But if it is something created that Jehovah will create, and the ground has to open its mouth and swallow them up and everything that belongs to them, and they have to go down alive into Sheol, you will then know for certain that these men have treated Jehovah disrespectfully. And it came about that as soon as he had finished speaking all these words, the ground that was under them began to be split apart, and the earth proceeded to open its mouth and to swallow up them and their households and all humankind that belonged to Korah and all the goods. So down they went, and all who belonged to them alive into Sheol, and the earth went covering them over so that they perished from the midst of the congregation. And all the Israelites who were round about them fled at the screaming of them. For they began to say, we are afraid that the earth may swallow us up. And a fire came out from Jehovah and proceeded to consume the 250 men offering the incense. Jehovah now said to Moses, now spoke to Moses, saying, say to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, that he should take up the fire holders from within the conflagration. And you scatter the fire over there, for they are holy. Even the fire holders of these men who sinned against their own souls, and they must make them into thin metal plates as an overlaying for the altar, because they presented them before Jehovah, so that they became holy, and they should serve as a sign to the sons of Israel. Accordingly, Eleazar the priest took the copper fire holders with which those who had been burned up had presented, and they proceeded to beat them out into an overlaying for the altar, as a memorial for the sons of Israel, to the end that no strange man who is not of the offspring of Aaron should come near to make incense smoke before Jehovah, and no one might become like Korah and his assembly, just as Jehovah had spoken to him by means of Moses. And directly the next day, the whole assembly of the sons of Israel began to murmur against Moses and Aaron, saying, you men, you have put Jehovah's people to death. And it came about that when the assembly had congregated themselves together against Moses and Aaron, they then turned toward the tent of meeting, and look, the cloud resided over it, and Jehovah's glory began to appear. And Moses and Aaron proceeded to come before the tent of meeting. Then Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, you men, rise up from the midst of this assembly, that I may exterminate them in an instant. At this they fell upon their faces After that, Moses said to Aaron, take the fire holder and put fire from upon the altar in it and put on incense and go to the assembly in a hurry and make atonement for them because the indignation has gone out from the face of Jehovah. The plague has started. Aaron at once took it just as Moses had spoken and went running into the midst of the congregation. And look, the plague had started among the people. So he put the incense on and began making atonement for the people. And he kept standing between the dead and the living. Eventually the scourge was stopped. And those dead from the scourge amounted to 14,700, aside from those dead on account of Korah. When at last Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting, the scourge had been stopped. That's the end of number 16. So even Moses had more compassion for the people than Jehovah in this instance. And even though Jehovah had wanted to exterminate them, Moses, in the first instance, made a plea in their behalf, and in the second instance, he took action to stop the plague. Now, from today's study in Acts, we have the continuation of Paul's dilemma, where he's been arrested. Therefore, Festus, after entering upon the government of the province, went up 3 days later to Jerusalem from Caesarea. And the chief priests and the principal men of the Jews gave him information against Paul. So they began to entreat him, asking for themselves as a favor against the man, that he would send for him to come to Jerusalem, as they were laying an ambush to do away with him along the road. So Festus had been with Paul in Caesarea. He'd gone to Jerusalem, and the people in Jerusalem, the Jews, wanted, the ones who were against Paul, wanted Festus to go back to Caesarea and bring Paul to them. They were planning to kill Paul. However, Festus answered that Paul was to be kept in Caesarea and that he himself was about to depart shortly for there. Quote, hence let those who are in power among you, he said, come down with me and accuse him if there is anything out of the way about the man, end quote. So when he had spent not more than 8 or 10 days among them, he went down to Caesarea. And the next day he sat down on the judgment seat and commanded Paul to be brought in. When he arrived, the Jews that had come down from Jerusalem stood round about him, leveling against him many and serious charges for which they were unable to show evidence. But Paul said in defense, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I committed any sin. Festus, desiring to gain favor with the Jews, said in reply to Paul, do you wish to go up to Jerusalem and be judged there before me concerning these things? But Paul said, I am standing before the judgment seat of Caesar, where I ought to be judged. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also are finding out quite well. If on the one hand I am really a wrongdoer and have committed anything deserving of death, I do not beg off from dying. If on the other hand none of those things exists of which these men accuse me, no man can hand me over to them as a favor. I appeal to Caesar. Then Festus, after speaking with the assembly of counselors, replied, to Caesar you have appealed. To Caesar you shall go. Now when some days had passed, Agrippa the king and Bernice arrived in Caesarea for a visit of courtesy to Festus. Now which Agrippa is this? Let's see. Agrippa. He's the king of Judea, with Caesarea serving as the governor's residence. This is fascinating. Now, which Agrippa is this? Another Agrippa who had succeeded the prior Agrippa, who died in 44 CE, evidently. I'm not sure. Who's Bernice? Was she the one that was... Let's search Bernice. Is she the one who appears more than once? No. She doesn't appear prior to this in the scriptures. So, she appears after this, and so on. So as they were spending a number of days there, so this is Agrippa, a different Agrippa from the one who died in 44 CE, Herod Agrippa. What was he called? Herod. He was called Herod Agrippa. That's right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So as they were spending a number of days there, Festus laid before the kingdom matters respecting Paul, saying, and we will, by the way, have to research the Agrippa again, for sure. There is a certain man left prisoner by Felix, Festus said to Agrippa. And when I was in Jerusalem, the chief priests and the older men of the Jews brought information about him, asking a judgment of condemnation against him. But I replied to them that it is not Roman procedure to hand any man over as a favor before the accused man meets his accusers face to face and gets a chance to speak in his defense concerning the complaint. Therefore, when they got together here, I made no delay, but the next day I sat down on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought in. Taking the stand, the accusers produced no charge of the wicked things I had supposed concerning him. They simply had certain disputes with him concerning their own worship of the deity and concerning a certain Jesus who was dead, but who Paul kept asserting was alive. So being perplexed as to the dispute over these matters, I proceeded to ask if he would like to go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be kept for the decision by the August One, I commanded him to be kept until I should send him on up to Caesar. Here Agrippa said to Festus, I myself would also like to hear the man. Tomorrow, he said, you shall hear him. Therefore, on the next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with much pompous show and entered into the audience chamber together with military commanders as well as men of eminence in the city. And when Festus gave the command, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all you men who are present with us, you are beholding this man concerning whom all the multitude of the Jews together have applied to me, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting that he ought not to live any longer. But I perceived that he had committed nothing deserving of death. So when this man himself appealed to the August One, I decided to send him. But concerning him, I have nothing certain to write to my Lord. Therefore, I brought him forth before you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, in order that, after the judicial examination has taken place, I might get something to write. For it seems unreasonable to me to send a prisoner and not also to signify the charges against him. That's the end of Acts 25. That's the end of our study for today, little children. I do love you. I do love you still. It is July 16th, 2023, 18:45 hours, and on my behalf, it is Ellie, the Longines watch, and Phoebe, the Russian Vostok watch, saying bye for now.